Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie. We're back.
Hi, Erica.
We're back.
That was so annoying. I actually hate us now. Sorry. Oops, I just
got
the ick.
I love it more annoying. I think it's very endearing, so I don't know.
To who?
Me. That's all.
Okay. Oh, great. Okay, great. Well, welcome to Book Talk Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we are going to be discussing the first section of Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield. I think that's the first 55 pages. So if you haven't read the book, pause, download the episode, and then come back after you've read it, because Katie's going to summarize what happened in this section, and then we'll talk about it.
We start this book with our couple, Leah and Miri. They're alternating stories throughout it. We start with Leah, who's a renowned marine biologist. She leaves to go on a three-week trip underwater in a submarine. Things go terribly wrong almost immediately, and they end up trapped for 6 months. We hear about Leah again from Miri's point of view, and Leah returns home a completely different person. So the narrative flips between Leah telling the story of the submarine, the sinking, the panicking, what they do. Eventually, they are fully rescued. And then Miri telling us about how Leah is coping in real time. She's trying to find her help and trying to find where the Leah that she knew before is inside of this new person. It's a moody, suspenseful start, and I am loving it. What did you think about this first section?
Oh, you're loving it?
I'm loving
it. Surprising.
I don't know why I'm like obsessed with it. I just feel like I love the writing style. I feel like it's equal parts suspenseful and moody and a little bit terrifying when we're in Leah's section. But then Miri is kind of this, I don't know, she's just thinking about what it means to love somebody and what it means to deal with someone who's going through a really hard time, not even being able to really get through to Leah at all. So I feel like the two contrasting stories of like this really terrifying moment and then her being safely at home trying to deal with the repercussions of that. I just love the way it's written and I'm really enjoying it so far.
I like it as a book. I am suffering, though, because this is truly my nightmare, going down in a submarine. I am very claustrophobic, and I have a very healthy fear of the ocean. I love the ocean. I love being in the ocean, but I definitely know that I don't fuck with the deep sea. And the idea of, like, potentially slowly dying because you're, like, encapsulated in this very small space at the bottom of the ocean is so terrifying. And then all the things that are happening as a result of being that far down is freaking me out.
Oh, it's freaking me out as well. That's why I feel like the Miri is like a salve to the how terrified I feel reading Leah's section. But her symptoms when she comes back are gross. It definitely, I read somewhere this was romantic horror, and I'm like, yep, that is the category we are in here. I agree. Healthy fear of the ocean also. I'm also just very easy to vividly picture these like huge jellyfish. And I don't know if you Googled any deep sea animals while, or fish, marine life while reading this, but there are some truly freaky things down there. And I think they're below, like they've sunk below where they were even expecting to study things in the deep sea. I think it's also kind of wild to think about when Leah first gets into wanting to be a marine biologist or learning to dive, and her dad just basically throws her in the water and she learns to swim out of the fear of not being able to. So I wonder how that's going to play into her kind of like actually realizing that fear and having to confront it in a way she hasn't before. Even though this is quote unquote her career, I just don't think you can be ready for that level of claustrophobia at the bottom of the ocean.
And you're right, whatever their physical bodies endured being at that low of sea level, the bottom of the sea, and the pressure, and then whatever they had to do to survive. I mean, we don't know yet what happened to the other people who are with her in the submarine. So I think it's an interesting side-by-side comparison, because we know she survives. Physically, she is damaged. Mentally, she's dealing with some issues, but she's alive. So that makes it a little bit easier to read, but at the same time, you're like, what happened that she came up basically completely in pieces? And I think her wife is asking the same thing.
Yeah, her physical symptoms and her psychological symptoms kind of side by side are also like, yes, she's here, but is she really? And yes, she's okay, but these symptoms are really concerning and it doesn't feel like it's very easy for Miri to get any help. Are they living in England or Australia?
Australia? I think they're in England. That was my guess.
Okay. So I don't know. Is it the National Health Service that's just not being helpful at all here? Like they're just leaving these people or this person? Because, yeah, we don't know if they survive yet. And I have to be honest with you. My first thought is cannibalism. And I don't know if that's because of the books you've made me read this year. So I'm going to go ahead and blame you for that one, that I feel like she might have eaten somebody else in the submarine.
This book's also slightly difficult to read in that you really have to pay attention. So, again, we don't have quotation marks. We have sort of these weird breaks within each chapter where we're sort of switching from flashbacks to current events to like, oh, now we're just jumping in and talking to Carmen. And you're like, who the fuck is Carmen? And then it's like, oh, I'm going to tell you who Carmen is just like in a couple of sentences. So the book is also sort of disorienting. And there's details that the characters know that we don't know yet. And I think at one point it's Leah who says, oh, but I'm not ready to talk about that yet. And clearly Miri also is not ready to talk about a lot of things either. So it's a gentle unfolding. And that's also sort of being done in a difficult to understand way. Right. Like exactly where are they is a question where we can't even answer.
I don't know what it is, though, between books like this, where I feel like it is a little bit disorienting, but in a way that makes me want to slow down and pay attention, and books like The Rabbit Hutch, where I felt like it didn't make me want to do that. I don't know if it's an over-intellectualizing in The Rabbit Hutch. Do you think that that's what it is? Because I feel like here it is a little bit disorienting. You do have to pay attention. There aren't quotation marks, but I think maybe it's also because there's so little plot. That could be it as well. Like the thing is, Leah was lost for 6 months. Leah is home. We are finding out what happened to Leah in the 6 months once we know she's okay. So we've got our beginning and our end, and we're just filling in the middle with the drama of what happened. And then the real-time plot is just Leah is not okay and Miri needs help. And that is like the only thing that's really happening. So maybe it's easier for me to focus on kind of what they're going through internally and what they're thinking through because the plot is so simple.
What do you think? And the plot is essentially that they really love each other and Miri is trying desperately to reconnect with her wife, who is now maybe irrevocably changed. And that's something we can all relate to, is change and how it impacts relationships and how you can grieve someone even if they're not gone, and how it seems almost worse at this stage, at least, that she's back, because she's not really back. It's like living with the ghost of the partner that you once loved.
Which has got to be so hard because you're in such close physical proximity, and now she's sleeping in the guest room, you know, just watching Leah suffer, but not being able to get through to her, not being able to like reach her or make sure she's okay. And I think this book does a good job exploring loneliness from both sides of that. So Leah is obviously feeling very alone in whatever she's dealing with. We don't even know if she's the only one who made it out okay, or if she made it out with these people who are also feeling the same thing. But in order to explain what she went through in the last 6 months, I mean, she probably has some serious PTSD from it, if she can even ever talk about it. And then you have Miri, who's been here the whole 6 months, probably despairing over the fact that she lost her partner. Her partner returns, and it's not this joyous reunion. She has to also deal with that. So they're both like together physically a lot, but completely apart, and trying to be there. Like Miri's trying so hard to be there for her, but also struggling because she doesn't really want to be at times. And I think anyone who's been a caregiver or who's seen someone who's changed as a completely different person can understand that part of it as well, because you want to do the caring, but you also partially resents her at times out of her own, you know, not of her own will, but she does resent her, or she's angry, or she feels alone in it. And she is also kind of self-isolating herself from her friends, who are not seemingly to be super helpful in this section. Carmen.
But Carmen doesn't get it, and I think it's also because Miri's not telling her everything that's happening, because Miri is sort of in that awkward space where, like, what do you really say? How do, like, I can't even really explain what's happening right now, so how am I going to explain this to anyone else?
Yeah, I think that's another part of being friends with people and wanting advice. She's like, let me tell you these four things and I kind of have an expectation for how you're going to be here for me. And when you're Carmen, you're hearing this very like surface level thing and you're like, yeah, I've been through that also. And Miri's like, no one's been through this. You don't get it. But also I don't have the energy to explain it to you. So it's just exhausting all around, I'm sure.
Julia is also a really, really great writer. So I love how she has these little moments of tenderness and affection, you know, where they're at this party and she pulls her hair that got stuck out of the back of her sweater. And she says, oh, in that moment, I felt like a zipper unzipping or something, and said, like, I'm sorry about that fight earlier. And it's like that sense of like when tension is released and when you're like, actually, that was so stupid, I'm not mad anymore. And you just feel like relief. And she's such a great writer. What a beautiful way to explain that feeling.
That might be why I love this book too. I think she just explains all of these emotions and these things that a lot of people can relate to and go through in such a beautiful and understanding, empathetic way. It's just lovely to read about the good and the bad of how they're kind of struggling. But also I like the flashbacks of how they fell in love, because you have kind of a big task in these first 55 pages. So you have to be bought into their love story enough to be bought into how much Miri loves her and how much she's willing to sacrifice. So you have to create the dire situation they're in now, but also remind you of how they got here in a quick 55 pages. So
the tone has been set. I'll say that. The tone has been set. I get there's a lot of love between these two women, and a horrible, unspeakable tragedy has happened to one of them, and now we're in the after times. And I desperately want to know what happens and also not have a panic attack while I'm reading this book, because, oof, I'm scared. The horror is horroring.
The horror is horroring. This is where you thrive, though. You love a dark and horror book.
Yeah, but not this is like particularly one of my really deep-seated fears. I am extremely claustrophobic, and so this is like, okay, that's dramatic. I'm not extremely claustrophobic, but
yeah,
certain
situations.
You live in a
500 square foot apartment.
Certain situations really get me. So I did get a little claustrophobic when I had COVID and I couldn't leave the apartment. And I asked my doctor, this was during the OG COVID, I asked my doctor if I could leave the apartment if I was going to have a panic attack. And she said, I'm supposed to tell you no. So try and sit on the fire escape. And then she's like, but if you're actually going to have a panic attack, you can go outside. Just wear a mask and don't tell anybody.
And maybe don't be on a fire escape. If you're going to have a panic attack, just seems like a dangerous situation.
Well, I just meant like, I feel like I can't get out.
Yeah.
It was like that sense trapped.
Right. Well, I can't wait to find out more. I need to know desperately what happened to these people in the submarine. I need to know if they all survived and what happened.
They didn't all survive. Of course they didn't all survive.
I mean, I get that, but you don't know that. I still think one of them, I think they had to eat somebody, or Leah had to eat them both. I mean, I don't know. How much food could you really have had with you on a submarine?
There's also an interesting, weird trauma response that's happening where Leah keeps going back to water for some reason. She like has to be in the bathroom. She wants to hear like specific sounds. She wants to be in the bathtub. There's a weird sense of, or like a weird metaphor about like going back to the source of trauma and maybe trying to like fix it or not being able to get out of that space. That's a theme I'm interested in learning more about or hearing more about what Julia has to say.
I agree. Yeah, there's something about maybe re-experiencing things that brought you trauma. I don't know what it is yet, but I feel like there's something to it. Maybe we'll need to do some research on that before next time. Obviously, we know there's something to it. That was a dumb thing to say, but you know what I mean?
I also don't really know. I guess I'm just don't know any marine biologists, but I don't understand where the physical symptoms came from. Is it from the pressure? Is it from being exposed to water for a long time? Is it from not being in the sun? That part, I hope she'll explain a little bit more.
I also wonder, and maybe I'll need to look up a bunch of these things before next time, like how long before, in general in our world now, or before this, I guess, in her fictional world, had people been underwater at one period of time? Curious. Like if the longest expeditions were only like 4 to 6 weeks, maybe the reason they have no coping mechanisms in place for Leo when she comes back specifically for her physical symptoms is that there are none yet. No one's been underwater that long. I don't know. Also, just how are they rescued? I have so many questions. And by they, I mean Leah, but also, I mean,
and who
the
else?
Submarine.
Else
I mean, someone didn't just dive down there and find her.
I'm sure we'll find out.
Can't wait. Okay, talk. Okay, as promised, I went on vacation and read a million books. This is about to be a rapid fire Katie's review of these books. So I finished Spare by Prince Harry. It was good, not super juicy if you've seen their Netflix special, not like a whole lot of new tidbits, but it's all from Harry's perspective and it was still really good. A lot about his wartime, 200 pages too long. Please get a new editor. 6 out of 10. Oh, I should add a 5. 2.5 out of 5. Seven Ooh. Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Brutal. That was a little brutal, but it was so long. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, you're probably 250 pages in before you meet Megan. Like, why are we reading this book if not for Megan? Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, 5 out of 5. I loved it. Maybe 4 out of 5 because I feel like it's just an enjoyable experience. It's a Taylor Jenkins read. I love Taylor Jenkins read. There's so much, just so many good nuggets in it. So many life lessons. I loved that book. As everyone said that I would for years and years. So I'm glad that I finally read it. Okay. I get it. Then I read Heartbones by Colleen Hoover on a plane. I picked it up in the airport bookstore because there was literally no options. Terrible bookstore. And then I read it and finished it when the plane landed. And I mean, it was a really unmemorable flight. I'm a really anxious flyer. Colleen Hoover books are excellent for that because it's really distracting and really dramatic while you're in it. But I had to look up what the book was even about. But it is about this girl who is about to go off to college. She comes from a really poor family. Her mom overdoses. She goes to her dad to stay with him, who she doesn't know at all, in his beautiful beach house. She meets kind of a group of people she becomes really good friends with, and one of them gets basically in a lot of trouble after telling some serious lies. So it's kind of about her coming of age story, her finding who she is, her reconnecting with her family. A lot of trauma per Colleen Hoover, kind of not really enough of digging into the deeper themes. If you like Colleen Hoover, you'll probably like this book. I always feel mediocre about her, but it's always an enjoyable experience while it's happening. I gave it to the girl next to me on the plane. She was like, I'm not a reader. I said, perfect, that you'll love this book. I mean, it's true. Then I read Nora Goes Off Script, which is currently my favorite rom-com of 2022. It was adorable. I loved the main characters. I still have warm and fuzzy feelings when I think about them and Nora and her kids and her falling in love. Also is in a really beautiful setting, which I also enjoy. So I loved the book. If you want a happy little weekend read, that is it. One of my favorites of this section of them. Then I read Less is Lost. If you've not read Arthur Less's, the first book about Arthur Less is just called Less. It's about like a middle-aged gay man. He's super quirky. He, in the first book, goes on kind of like a worldwide book tour, and it ends with him falling in love with his partner, Freddie. And this book is about him and Freddie are about to lose their apartment, and Less, who is really introverted and doesn't like people. He's very particular, a little monk-esque. He has to go on a cross-country road trip to basically go to some speaking gigs to raise enough money to keep their apartment in San Francisco. And he just gets himself in so many issues. There's like, it's hilarious and quirky. He's adorable. And I just love him. Every time I read it, I'm like, I love this man. Also a happy, adorable, heartwarming read. Not a rom-com, but just heartwarming to read. Then I read Someone Else's Shoes by JoJo Moyes. Moyes? Is that how you say her name?
Couldn't tell
but
you.
But something similar. There's not an R Sounds
in it, right?
Sounds
right to me.
Okay. JoJo Moyes. I love her books. The Giver of the Stars was a book I adored. So when I saw this one come on my recommended, I was like, I'm going to read it. It's about a story told from two women's point of view. They both leave their gym bag at the same gym. One is a real Marc Jacobs. One's a knockoff. They pick up the wrong ones. And then it's about the drama that unfolds at that point. One of them is she's currently in the middle of getting divorced, which she finds out that day, and she loses access to her entire fortune. She's dealing with this crazy ex-husband. She's definitely in the 1%. And she's thrown back into essentially being a maid to put food to be able to eat because she has nothing. And then the other girl is struggling with her husband who's going through depression. So their stories overlap. It's a great book about grief, about female friendships, about being strong when you don't want to have, when you can't, don't think you can anymore. Wow. What was that sentence? But you get it. I loved it. It was a great book. I am currently reading, just to wrap this up, Light Lark, which is a, I think, YA fantasy novel, but someone gave it to me and said that they loved it. So per usual, I'll read any book you give to me. It's fun. It is 100% fantastical. It's about these five rulers of their realms coming together at this competition. Someone's going to have to die in order to break all the curses of their realms. So it's very fun. And I think I would like there to be a spicy scene, but I don't think there's going to be. And then I'm also reading Cultish, which is a book about how people get into cults, how cults form, how language shapes the way that we view the world. It's nonfiction. So kind of reading those two opposite books at the same time. Oh, okay. I'm exhausted.
Cultish has been on my list for a while. Again, I'm just not the biggest nonfiction book reader.
Yeah.
But I really have lots of reasons to love that book. Yeah. So it's on my list.
It's really interesting. And I will say, so far, I'm about halfway through it. What I'm not a huge nonfiction reader either. This has enough really interesting stories about cults you've heard of that it keeps it, it feels almost fictional because you're like enveloped by these stories and then you kind of back out of it and learn the how and why.
Right. Also love that you're reading books other than the books that you stole from my apartment to read.
Well, they're next on my list.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a deadline. I'm picking them up
soon. I know. Believe me. I'm not going to finish Cultish. The nice thing about a nonfiction book is there's not a lot of plot. I feel like I can pick it up and put it down. I'll probably finish Light Lark tonight, and then I'm going to read Demon Copperhead is next, and then whatever other one I took from you. Oof, I have like 2 weeks.
Wow. Impressive. Okay, I only have one book update because it was a very long book, but I read Pachinko.
Yes.
Which I really loved. It's a historical family fiction. So it's about this Korean family who live in Japan or go to Japan and how all of their stories evolve over four generations. And the family is all endearing, also very frustrating, also very prideful, also hardworking. And you see them basically go from being pretty much dirt poor to sort of successful to very successful, and the different challenges that they experience along the way and the tragedies the families go through. At the same time, you get an interesting insight into Korea v. Japan v. China, which is a distinction I'm embarrassed and ashamed to say I did not know that much about, like the kind of really contentious history between those different cultures within Asia. And I've learned a lot from getting my PhD and spending a lot more time with people who are Korean and Chinese and Japanese. And this book is at a very difficult time to be Korean in Japan. And it's a super interesting story about that. I loved it.
Wow, that sounds lovely.
Well, that's it. And then, I'm reading this book called An American Marriage, which is great because I was going to Atlanta and it's set in Atlanta. It's this couple who are married for a year and then he gets arrested and goes to prison. He's wrongfully accused. And his wife is then entangled romantically with a family friend and then he gets out of prison. So it's the story of the three of them trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, I read that book and did not like it. I can't wait to hear what you think.
What?
I think it was like, it's fine, but I was like 3 out of 5. Like, I didn't love it. I read it a couple years ago. I know, and I can't remember who the author is, but she wrote something else that I loved.
Okay.
So I was expecting to love it, and I didn't, so keep us updated.
Oh, okay. We'll see. I really like it so far, but we'll see where it goes.
Okay. Yay.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.